You are Locked On Raiders, your daily Oakland Raiders podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Just win.
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. With a rollicking song, he sweeps along, swaggering boisterously. His face is weather-beaten. He wears a hooded sash with a silver hat about his head and a bristling black mustache. He growls as he storms the country, a villain big and bold. And the trees all shake and quiver and quake as he robs them of their gold. The autumn wind is a raider, pillaging just for fun. He'll knock you round and upside down and laugh when he's conquered and won.
What up, Raider Nation? Welcome into Wednesday's episode of the Locked On Raiders podcast. Again, it's Wednesday, February 19th, 2020. Your boy Q here. You can always find me on Twitter at your boy Q254. Hopefully you've been enjoying the shows that you've heard so far this week on Monday and Tuesday. Hopefully you'll enjoy the show that you're about to hear today. So coming up on today's show in segment number three, been liking hearing text messages and calls. Really cool that we're able to do both those features. So in segment number three, you'll hear some text messages and some calls straight off that Locked On Raider podcast. Voicemail line 707-654-4693. Again, the number is 707-654-4693. I know I got it wrong on Monday, but did not mean to do that. Again, mental fatigue just kind of kicked in, especially after the long weekend I had, plus everything I've been having going on as of late just kind of threw me off. So 707-654-4693, that is the number, and you'll hear that coming up in segment number three. In segment number two, you'll hear an interview that actually happened on ESPN Central Texas during my radio show, Unnecessary Roughness, from 12 to 3 every single Monday through Friday Central Time, of course. It is with Benjamin Solak from thedraftnetwork.com. You know, around here on the Locked On Raider Podcast Network, a lot of times we have Mock Draft Monday, and I haven't really been doing that, but he put out a Mock Draft 5.0. He did a bunch of trades, and he did two rounds, and it was really good stuff. I found it very, very interesting, so put him on the show, on the radio show on Monday. Talk to him for a good, 10 to 12 minutes. So you'll hear that conversation coming up in segment number two. And I do encourage you to go over to thedraftnetwork.com or draftnetwork.com. You can find it pretty easily. Benjamin Solak has a really good mock draft 5.0 that you might want to check out. So you'll hear that conversation again coming up in segment number two. Here in segment number one, like I always do, want to give you the news and the notes of the day. So what I want to touch on first is the fact that Trayvon Mullen, second-year guy, Trayvon Mullen, was working out with Chad Ochocinco. That's right, Chad Johnson, former wide receiver in the NFL, former really, really good wide receiver. He actually put out there on Instagram, and a couple really good listeners to the Locked On Raider podcast actually tweeted at me, and for some reason I can't read or I can't see Ochocinco on Twitter. I don't know if he blocked me. I don't know if maybe he's just got his tweets protected. I don't know, but I can't see him. So they actually had to be pointed out to me. But Trayvon Mullen was working out with Ochocinco, putting in a lot of work. And I like to see that. And I bring that up as news and notes, even though it's nothing, no breaking news. It's nothing earth shattering. A lot of guys do this, but I like to see a young, hungry dude. And Trayvon Mullen is a young, hungry dude, and I love the fact that he was working one-on-one with Chad Ochocinco. I mean, again, Ochocinco is a lot of things, but one thing that he was really, really good at was being a wide receiver in the NFL. And one thing he was really good at was his release off the line of scrimmage. And so I like the fact that Trayvon Mullen was doing a lot of work, including, press man-to-man coverage. He was working on his zone coverage. I mean, he was working on a lot of things. Goal line to goal line is how Ochocinco actually described it as far as work goes with Trayvon Mullen. So just like to see him out there putting in that work. And you remember last offseason, while AB was still supposed to be a member of the Raiders, he had been working out with AB, trying to pick his brain and trying to get the best of him and just trying to get better as an athlete, as a defensive back. And again, that's going to go a long way. It's the work that you do when people aren't watching that makes you a better person. And that's with whatever you're doing. Anything that you are doing, it don't matter if you're an athlete, it don't matter if you're a radio host, it don't matter if you're working at Foster Farms. It's what you do while people aren't looking that's going to make you that better person, or better at your job, or better at whatever you're trying to get better at. It's that extra know-how that you got to have. So like the fact that Trayvon Mullen was out there put in that work. Also, former Raiders defensive coordinator Jason Tarver, he was hired as the Browns linebacker coach on Tuesday. And look, that had been in the rumbling for a while, but it's really funny because Jason Tarver, he was hired by Dennis Allen. And actually, when he was in the third season as a defensive coordinator for the Raiders, he actually hired Joe Woods or had Joe Woods under him as a defensive backs coach. Well, Joe Woods is now the Browns defensive coordinator, and he has brought in Jason Tarver as his linebacker coach. So, yeah, Jason Tarver, the guy that they used to call the Mad Scientist, the guy who's probably most famous for flipping the bird off to the officials during the Steeler game back in the day. Yeah, he is a dude that I was excited about when the Raiders hired him. I thought, oh, man, Dennis Allen's going to get his guy in there. Man, he's going to be a stud. And, well, he just turned out not to be that guy. But it was just funny, man, just to see how excited fans, including myself, get just by a certain hire. You think it's going to be great. I remember Dennis Allen thinking, man, he's got that Denver defense going pretty good. He's going to be a really good head coach for the Raiders. And, man, all of a sudden, this Jason Tarver guy, he's a young dude coming from Stanford. He's a mad scientist. Oh, he's going to be a stud. Yeah, it didn't work out that way. Anyway, Jason Tarver is now the linebackers coach with the Cleveland Browns. Another piece of news that I wanted to pass along to you, according to Vincent Bonsignor on Twitter, and I know I'm probably saying his last name wrong, but it's Bonsignore. He was a longtime Charger beat writer, but apparently he's a Raider beat writer now in Vegas. Anyway, he put out on Twitter, should be an interesting week in Indianapolis. Growing sense within the league is there are NFL teams prepared to inquire with the Raiders about the possibility of trading for Derek Carr. Now, again, not trying to start no Derek Carr controversy, but that's going to be one of the biggest names, one of the biggest conversations around surrounding the Raiders until it's not. You know, it was the same way last season, last offseason. You know, everybody was trading Derek Carr, getting rid of Derek Carr. Kyler Murray was going to be the guy, or insert this guy. Drew Lock was going to be the guy. Whatever, something was going to happen, and Derek Carr wasn't going to be the quarterback until he was the quarterback. So, again, just got to get prepared for this. And I mentioned it the other day that the combine, that is where teams start talking to GMs and agents start talking to GMs and front office guys and talk about, you know, really get rumors started. And so there probably will be a lot of conversation. I'm not going to deny there'll probably be a lot of conversation around Derek Carr at the combine. And I'm sure the Raiders will listen. You know, if there's a team that comes to them like the Colts and says, hey, you know, what is it going to take to get Derek Carr out of there? And if Mike Mayock says it take a second round draft pick and the Colts say, okay, no doubt. Then I can see Derek Carr on his way out of town. But I think that Mike Mayock and John Gruden are going to do that regardless. You know, they're going to do their due diligence, trying to improve the team any way that they can. So don't be surprised if you hear something coming out of the combine about Derek Carr. It's sure to happen. And, you know, Vincent just pointed out that it should be a very interesting week. So, again, as it rolls through, as the combine hits, and as I start hearing stuff, I'll definitely bring it to you here on the Locked On Raiders podcast. Kind of a busy day for news. Max Crosby, Mad Max Crosby. He was on NFL Network on Tuesday. Probably had about a 6-minute interview, and you can find that right now if you haven't checked it out on Raiders.com. NFL Network is always one of my go-tos. I love to watch that. And so I was checking out the interview he had with Andrew Siciliano. He was talking about moving to Vegas, having a better year two than he did his rookie season, being Max Crosby 2.0, as a matter of fact, is how he described it, really becoming the guy for the Raiders. Not only just a great player, but a leader, and possibly trying to break the single-season sack record set by Derek Burgess of 16 back in the day. Derek actually did that in 2005. That was his first season with the Raiders. And I'm telling you, man, I love me some Derek Burgess. Really did. Love to see him coming off the edge. That dude was so explosive. And man, what a hell of a player he was, right? He was great. He had 38 and a half career sacks with the Raiders in 4 seasons. 56 total games. He had 13 and a half the rest of his career in the league. And that's 5 other seasons, 46 total games with the Eagles and with the Patriots. So, yeah, he did most of his work as a member of the Oakland Raiders, and I loved every second of it. That dude was a dog. But yeah, he actually holds the single season record, sack record for the Raiders at 16. And so CC Sabathia, he had been on NFL Network, and he said he thinks that Mad Max is going to get 14 and a half. And then so Andrew Siciliano said, well, I figure you're going to go after Derek Burgess' record of 16 and try to get that. And Max said, hell, I go for 30 if I can get it. And I just like Max Crosby a lot. And so I was going to play that interview here on the podcast so you can hear it. But instead, I just reached out to him. I shot him a text message, and hopefully he'll return the text. And, you know, if he does, I'll get him on the show, and you can hear from him, and I'll have my own questions for him. And if not, well, then that's cool, too. He's already given me time before on the podcast, so it is all good. But, yeah, definitely go ahead. If you're a Max Crosby fan, and I don't know how you can't be, go ahead and check out that interview right now on Raiders.com. Final piece of news I want to hit you with, and it really is not Raiders related, but the Seahawks are signing former Panthers tight end Greg Olsen to a 1-year, $7 million deal. Only reason I bring that up is because we had talked about him on the podcast before. He was negotiating with the Buffalo Bills, the Washington Redskins, and the Seattle Seahawks. Instead of going to a team where he's with coaches that he's already familiar with in Washington and Buffalo, he decided to go ahead and make the trip out west and go with Seattle because of Russell Wilson. So that's what happens when you have a great, great quarterback. Guys will go out of their way to play with him. And so Greg Olsen, that's a big pickup for the Seattle Seahawks. But again, just brought that up because we had talked about him before on the podcast. Coming up in segment number two, Benjamin Solak from DraftNetwork.com, DraftNetworkLLC.com. He had his mock draft 5.0, and he was a guest on my radio show on ESPN Central Texas on Monday. You're going to hear that interview next. But before we get into that, I got to tell you about Blue Chew. Guys, fellas, remember when sex was really, really good? Remember when you were just ready to go all the time and you knew that I'm about to be a stud? Remember when it was like, man, this girl just don't know. She about to get the business, and man, it's going to be a whole different ballgame. Now, I ain't trying to get too explicit, but you know what I'm talking about, fellas. Maybe you're not quite that dude right now. Maybe you need to be that guy, and you want to be that guy. Well, Blue Chew can help you out be that guy. Blue Chew gives you that extra oomph that you're looking for, all right? You can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in the bedroom with Blue Chew. Go to BlueChew.com, and that's like the color blue. Brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know it's going to work. You can take it anytime, day or night, full stomach or not. And since it's chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill. You can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Matter of fact, this is what you could do. You could pop in the Locked On Raiders podcast, and you could pop in a Blue Chew, and then by the time you're done with the show, you could be ready to go. Probably be ready to go halfway through the show, but I'm just saying, you could do that if you want to do it. Again, you want to try it for free? You can. You know my motto, if it ain't free, it ain't me. BlueChew.com, promo code Locked On. All you got to do is pay $5 for shipping. Again, BlueChew.com, promo code Locked On. Get you back to being the dude that you want to be. And of course, it's because of Blue Chew. So one more time, BlueChew.com, promo code Locked On. Try it for free. I thank you for being a sponsor of the Locked On Raiders podcast. Segment number two, that's on the way.
You are Locked On Raiders, your daily podcast on the Oakland Raiders. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, Raider Nation, here we are jumping into segment number two of today's Locked On Raiders podcast. Thought it'd be good to do a little bit of draft stuff. I mean, again, I'm not really taking a whole lot into a lot of mock drafts that I see right now, but I did see an interesting one on Monday from Benjamin Solak from DraftNetwork.com, and he put out his mock draft 5.0, but I thought it was interesting because he did two rounds and he did trades and had all kind of interesting stuff. Actually had the Raiders trading. Who do you have the Raiders trading with? I'm not looking at it right now. Anyway, he had them trading, and I think he went back two spots. The Raiders went back from 12 to 14, but yeah, I can't remember exactly who it was, but maybe it was a team traded up to get a quarterback. Anyway, you just got to go check it out. I should be looking at it right now. I should be better prepared, but I'm not. So let's go ahead and just get into the interview itself. So this was on ESPN Central Texas Unnecessary Roughness on Monday. Craig Smoke, myself, and Stephen Simcox. This is our conversation with Benjamin Solak.
There's obviously a lot of storylines, but what is the number one storyline to you? Is it the Bengals and who they take at number one? Is it a particular player? What is the hot topic du jour for you when it comes to this upcoming draft?
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on. With the simple reality is, in the short-term time frame, we're most interested in what's the case with the Alabama quarterback. Tua Tagovailoa had the awful hip dislocation injury against Mississippi State, and what was generally a really solid junior season. He elects to come out betting on himself to have positive medical checks at the combine, which is next week in Indianapolis. If he comes back on schedule, recovering well, no long-term damage anticipated, he's a potential top three pick, and there could be rumors about the Dolphins, the Chargers, the Panthers getting in a fight to trade up to that Lions pick at three to go get him. But if there's lingering doubt that the guy's had multiple high ankle sprains, he starts to get that injury red flag label, and then it becomes a question of where he falls. So right now, our biggest wild card in the draft is Tua Tagovailoa. The penultimate moment for him has always been this combine, and now we're just a week away. How will he check out with the doctors in Indy? Which teams will tell you that's the most important part, not the on-field testing. It's how you test with the doctors if you have any existing or lingering injury. How he tests there dictates his draft stock, changes the landscape of the first round.
I saw on your mock draft 5.0 that Tua was the guy that you selected for the Panthers. That you actually had them trading up to number three to go get him. How does the quarterback market shape up after Joe Burrow, after Tua, after Jordan Love? I mean, what if you got to get a quarterback and you don't get him early on, what are you looking looking at?
It's always tricky, right? Because there's this myth of the late round development of a quarterback. And if you go and you look through drafts, that player doesn't really exist. Like, we have Dak Prescott, we have Tom Brady, but these are like once in a generation dudes. If you want a quarterback, you have to spend an early pick on him in the first round, right? Even with Lamar Jackson at 32, the Ravens decided to trade up to get into the first round to get that fifth year option, because if he's good, they want that extra year of him being cheap. So whenever you evaluate quarterbacks in this class and in any class, you ask yourself the question, is he worth a first round pick? Yes or no? And I think with Tua and with Burrow, we've got that locked in. Justin Herbert out of Oregon and Jordan Love out of Utah State will also be a resounding consensus yes across the board for teams. So we expect at least four to go in the first round. And then it becomes your case du jour. Who do you like? Jacob Eason out of Washington is all tools, big arm strength. Jake Fromm out of Georgia is all the intangibles, ton of leadership. Jalen Hurts, Oklahoma and Alabama, you know, that championship experience, the running ability. Even Anthony Gordon out of Washington State, they've turned out some good late-round quarterbacks out of late in the Mike Leach system. So you have some of these guys who are fringe dudes. Maybe they go end of round one, more likely day two or day three. But the reality is if you're trolling for a starter, you've got to be spending an early first and mid-first round pick on these guys. Players who are drafted in later rounds, they sometimes pan out to be good backups. They sometimes pan out to be journeymen. It's very rare that they pan out to really be true starters at the NFL level.
In your latest mock, you got the Panthers coming up the board to get to it. Number three, is that something you're hearing? Is that just something that makes sense to you? What led to that decision, Benjamin?
Right, it's always reading the tea leaves, you know, and then you bounce it off people that you're talking to and you say, all right, is this totally insane or is this possible? And the reality is times are changing in Carolina. We have the new owner in David Tepper. He retains GM Marty Herney, but installs an analytics department, goes out, makes an aggressive head coaching hire in Matt Rhule. So if there's a team that's going to be aggressive in the draft in terms of trading up for a quarterback, it's going to be Carolina. Miami right now has the, you know, they're the house, you know what I mean? They have a good hole card, so they can sit at five and get Tua. They're not going to try to trade up unless they know somebody else is seriously interested. That's most likely to be Carolina. Remember, Matt Rhule's on a long-term contract, and when a coach is on a long-term contract, he's able to be more aggressive in the draft because he knows, okay, even if I give up some next year picks, I'll still be around. I don't have to go and make picks now and win now to secure my job. I can have a long-term view, which allows me to mortgage a little bit of my future to go out and get a potential star player. So it's a tea leaf thing. Carolina is going to be aggressive. That's the mentality behind the new owner. And that trickles down and dictates what they do in team and roster building, especially in the draft. They're the team that's likely to trade up. Then obviously it becomes a debate. Miami has a ton more capital than they do, especially right now. So we're talking trading up with the Lions. Miami's probably the better of the two suitors, but does Miami want to trade up, or are they okay with Justin Herbert? So it's a tea leaf thing, right? We're nowhere near Carolina making a big offer to Detroit. If that's going to happen, it's going to happen after the medical recheck for Tua, like I said. But that's the team that's most likely to go do it.
Cowboys, you've got them at number 17, selecting Javon Kinlaw out of South Carolina, and he's a name that throughout all of the All-Star games, we were hearing a lot of buzz about him. I know that you make one of the comments, it's like, oh, well, he won't be available here. Why is he getting so much buzz, Javon Kinlaw, and what made you look at this as a fit?
Yeah, so you're going to see Kinlaw on your television screen in a couple of days, and you're going to understand why he's going so high. Kid's made out of stone. Unbelievable frame. Doesn't come around like this every so often. He's a special dude athletically. He's going to test it accordingly. He chose to go back to South Carolina in his senior season, despite the fact that the NFL in 2019 was generally ready to take this guy in the first round off potential alone. When he goes back in his senior season, his play improved. He caught some bad weight, and he began to show what that athleticism can do inconsistently. Still's got to string it together from a game-by-game, snap-by-snap perspective, but the flashes are up there. They're as good as anybody in this class, including Derek Brown, the Auburn defensive tackle, who's probably defensive tackle number one. Now, Kinlaw makes a ton of sense in Dallas because they really need that penetrating pass rush sort of a guy in the interior. They've struggled for so long to generate sacks from the inside and generate pocket push from the inside. They've had guys in the past 5 or so years who've held up against the run, who've showed it inconsistently. But Kinlaw at 17 is great value for his ceiling. And even if in year one he's not all the way put together, he has a good chance to be a 10-year guy you give a second contract to, and he becomes a blue chip defensive tackle, pass rushing, 3 tech, 8 sacks, 9 sacks, 10 sacks a year guy from the inside. That's rarefied air. But we're talking about a really unique athlete who's clearly starting to put it together from a technique perspective. So the need makes a lot of sense. The fit makes a lot of sense. It's a matter of if Kinlaw stays on the board for that long.
All we keep hearing about is how deep this wide receiver draft class is for the draft. And you have Denzel Mims from Baylor in the second round going to Green Bay. We have a good eye on him. We like to see what Denzel and the rest of the Baylor guys are doing. So do you feel like Denzel, that should be the floor for him around the second round, maybe late or early third round? And what are you seeing from the rest of this wide receiver class?
Yeah, prognosticating wide receivers is always tough because it comes down to a body type thing, right? Two teams can need a wide receiver, but one team can be looking for a smaller, a shiftier slot guy, quick dude, and another team can be looking for that downfield, above the rim, contested catch, red zone guy. And so you might be able to say, listen, Denzel Mims looks like he should go in the second round. The tape at Baylor is tremendous. The production at Baylor is tremendous. The athletic ability is going to check a lot of boxes. The Senior Bowl was great. You ask Denzel Mims what makes him unique. He's, I think, blocking, his effort, which coaches love wide receivers who will go out there and block for him. So Mims checks all the boxes. But placing this guy always is tough until we get closer to the draft, because you really have to figure out which teams are going to like a player of his skill set. Mims right now did not run the most intense route tree at Baylor and did not run the best routes at Baylor. So teams that are going to like him are going to be teams who can give him a simple route tree, slant, post, nine ball, deep comeback. Everything in the vertical third. Just let him be on half of the field. He'll win in contested situations, and he'll win with some downfield speed as well. So teams who want that downfield threat to win through physicality, those are going to be the teams interested in Denzel Mims. I think he's going to start being in the conversation on round two. And if he makes it into round three, it won't be for very long. He's checked every box so far in this pre-draft process. As long as he doesn't bomb the combine, he'll have raised his stock considerably, and he was already a pretty solid day two guy. So, yeah, round two feels right for me for Mims. I'm a big fan of his, though. I like that kid.
Another Big 12 wideout you have late in the first round is Jalen Reagor, who you have going to Baltimore in your latest mock. I know Jalen's production his last year at TCU wasn't the best, Benjamin. Do you think teams are willing to look past that just because he's such an athletic freak?
Yeah, whenever we contextualize wide receiver production, we always like to understand it in terms of the market share. Because, let's be honest, Reagor didn't produce very well, not because Reagor was bad, but because the TCU passing offense was bad. They didn't have anything through the air, and they were quarterback carousel. During the end of the year, maybe they settled it out a little bit, but by then it was a little bit too late. So certainly Reagor didn't put up gaudy numbers, but he still owned a very large percentage of the passing offense as a whole, which is to say when the passing offense was successful, it was through Reagor. Reagor is a young prospect. He was an 18-year-old freshman who was highly productive, and now he's coming out. He's going to be 20, not even yet 21 by the time he gets to an NFL camp, which means he has a really high ceiling. The athletic traits are great, and everybody knows he was held back by the quarterback play in TCU. So it's okay. It's excusable. It's explainable why he doesn't have great production. Reagor's return ability and what I expect to be pretty unique athletic ability at the combine is going to put him in that late first-round conversation.
Benjamin Solak of the Draft Network joining us here on ESPN Central Texas. A little appetizer for the draft coming up here in a couple of months. And Benjamin, we talked about Denzel Mims, another player from Baylor expected to be drafted. After he left a year early as defensive lineman James Lynch. Any kind of a pulse on James Lynch and where you kind of see him fitting in?
Yeah, James Lynch is going to be one of these guys that I think goes earlier than a lot of us in the media expect. And we'll get it, but not really. Because Lynch's film, there's nothing you really go and you hang your hat on. He's always particularly quick, always particularly powerful, always got great rush moves and technique. There's nothing there that you're like, all right, this is how he's going to win at the NFL level. But with that said, he plays with outstanding effort. He has a lot of tools in his toolbox, which is to say that he's versatile, not prohibitively slow or prohibitively weak or only has one rush. His versatility, and coaches love him because of the way he approaches the field and the way he approaches the weight room and the film room in preparation for the week. So he's that Matt Rhule Baylor Bear. He's got a lot of really good intangibles to him, and his versatility working from the 3-tech outside to the 5-tech and even wider appeals to teams who like to be versatile and multiple with their front. So any defensive line and defensive coaching philosophy from the Belichick tree, think about what Romeo Crennel did a little bit when he was still the DC there in Houston, or Matt Patricia with the Lions, Rabel with the Titans, Belichick in New England, does value a player like Lynch to give him the different spots he can play. So So I think that Lynch is going to be a guy who maybe goes in the top 100, maybe a little bit after 100, fringe round three, maybe round four guy, which, again, even though there's nothing that you really go, all right, this is where he's going to be elite in the league, he has great production, great intangibles. Teams value those players on the bench.
I think everyone agrees that Isaiah Simmons is the number one linebacker, but after that, it seems like it's been a question and somewhat of a debate between Kenneth Murray and Patrick Queen. What are your thoughts on those guys, and how does this linebacking class look like?
Yeah, man. When Dylan Moses had the injury and then went back to school, we were wondering who would step up. And Kenneth Murray significantly improved this year. He's playing better at a big weight, which matters to some NFL teams that they have linebackers over 240. He runs with great speed. But what he was doing behind the slanting front, Alex Grinch defense, the pass coverage wasn't really there. He was blitzing a ton. So he's quick to trigger, quick to flow. There's not a lot of great examples of slow, patient processing, kind of deciphering the riddle of the offense. But in so much as he grew this year, Patrick Queen, who did not even come into the season as a starter, by the time the season ended, LSU was national champion, he had wrested control of the defense. He was the captain. He was calling the shots. And so really delightful growth process from Queen over the course of this last year. You might have the same concerns you do with Joe Burrow a little bit on the offensive side in terms of, oh, man, you know, is this a situation where we've got players who are just growing now, just starting, you know, to really shine like NFL players. But Queen's got delightful movement skills. He's a really smart guy, great vision. He's linebacker too for me, even though he came on late to the season. The film is just too good at this point.
All right, so there it was right there, our conversation with Benjamin Solak from Draft Network LLC, talking all things NFL draft and his mock draft 5.0, and really enjoyed his conversation. Thought he had a lot of good stuff to say right there. And again, as a guy that I will be paying attention to, him, Daniel Jeremiah, cats like that, Mel Kiper, of course, I'll be paying attention to, Jordan Reed. Those guys, I'll be paying attention to what they say coming up to the draft, what they got going on, because usually they have a lot of good stuff to say, and they really know their stuff. So I really enjoy hearing from those guys. So coming up in segment number three, your calls and text straight off that Locked On Raider podcast. Voicemail line 707-654-4693. Before I get into that, though, I want to tell you about Arizona and how great Arizona could be. I don't know about you. Where I'm at right now in Central Texas, it is absolutely raining. The weather stinks. It's cold. One day it's hot. The next day it's cold. Next day it's raining. It's freezing. I mean, just the weather is awful. So why don't you get to Arizona where, well, the weather's always the same and it's always nice, and you can go and enjoy spring training with the family, especially if they're going on spring break anytime soon. You can go 10 stadiums, 15 Major League Baseball teams, all in Arizona, all Cactus League spring training. Again, all the stadiums are in the greater Phoenix area within 50 miles of each other, and of course you can meet and greet with the players, get the autographs, take pictures, do what you gotta do. Do it for the gram, whatever you want to say, you can do. And it's not just for kids, it's not just for a family. If you want to get out and have a couple drinks, maybe you and the wife want to go out, have some drinks, and listen to some music, they have that. Local bands, national acts, all that. They are right there in Arizona at some great locations like Four Peaks, Angels Trumpet Ale House, Goldwater Brewing Company, and a whole lot more. But again, if you're trying to focus on the kids, and you could do that, it's all good. There's plenty of things for them to do as well. I've been to spring training one time in my life, and I would love to go back again, but they got family-friendly resorts, the hotels, plenty of fun for kids of all ages, water parks, horseback riding if you do that kind of thing, games and activities. Right now, if you want to plan out your spring training getaway, go to visitarizona.com/springtraining. visitarizona.com/springtraining. Segment number three is on the way.
You are Locked On Raiders, your daily podcast on the Oakland Raiders, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Here we go, Raider Nation. Segment number three of today's Locked On Raiders podcast, Wednesday, February 19th, 2020. Time for your calls and your texts straight off that Locked On Raider podcast. Voicemail line 707-654-4693. I really, again, have been enjoying having text messages and calls. Think it's really cool. Sometimes people could just say what they want to say, and it's a little bit quicker on the text message, and it's a little bit easier to get in. So I like that I've been able to blend the text messages and the calls. Hopefully you're enjoying that as well. So let's go ahead and jump right in. We'll start with the calls today. I think we started with the text messages yesterday, so let's go ahead and start with calls today. Sean from Salt Lake City, he's up first, calling in to talk about what he heard on Tuesday's episode of the podcast when it comes to Brady and Carr. Kind of wants to respond to that. Here he is, Sean from Salt Lake City.
What's up, Q? What's up, Raider Nation? It's Sean from Salt Lake City. Just in the middle of listening to Tuesday's podcast. You're going off about Tom Brady and Derek Carr and how just the whole, how the narrative changed and stuff, and I really like the points you bring up. I'm not going to sit there and say back in like 2015, 2016, I was like, oh, Derek Carr is the next Tom Brady, just because Tom Brady just had a different situation. I feel like he's just a different mindset. He's a different kind of player, and he had that consistent coaching. But I mean, if you watch them play, I mean, that's the same quarterback. It's a quick check down. Brady, I think, has just been blessed with more weapons. And so I've always been the person that says, Carr needs the weapons, he needs the weapons, yada, yada. Also, I feel like Carr's biggest thing is he needs a solid run game. And I like that with Jacobs, give him some receivers, and I think something will happen. But at the same time, I also know that I think Carr's confidence is gone. I don't think he has confidence in himself. And I think he's just been so used to playing it one way that it's like trying to teach a dog old tricks. I just don't see it changing. That's why I'm all for changing quarterback. But I'm just kind of with you the whole Tom Brady thing. I've always thought it was just a similar playing style. I mean, obviously Brady reads defenses better in the red zone, yada yada. But it's still the same playing style, and that's why I was okay with Carr and building around him. But I mean, if it's between Carr and Brady, I mean, I'm gonna just say Carr just because he's cheaper, younger, and I think he will want to teach a younger quarterback more so than Tom Brady will. Either of them personally. And maybe Tom Brady wants to be a coach. Maybe Carr doesn't. Maybe Carr's a freaking dickhead and we don't know that. You know what I mean? But I just think we all just need to pump the brakes on just complaining about Brady coming or wanting him to come. We just have got to realize that we are Raider fans and whatever's going to make us win, that's all that matters. Because we just got to win. All of our nation is sitting losing. That's just kind of where I stand. Whatever's going to make us win, I don't even freaking care. If they want to trade all three third-round picks for Darius Slay and pay him, I know you said that's a bad idea, but if that's going to make us win, that's what I want. You know what I mean? And I think we're all on the same page. But I just wanted to call in and give my 2 cents on the Tom Brady thing. Either way, peace out,
Q. No doubt about it, my man. And I agree with your call and thoughts. And like I said before, man, and I realize folks think I'm defending Carr or folks think I'm banging the table for Brady. I'm not doing either one of those. I'm just saying that all we heard in 2019 as fans and a lot of the arguments that was had by other fans was that the Raiders just didn't have any kind of weapons, that Derek Carr needed weapons around him. And all of a sudden, suddenly, you know, because Brady's name has been involved and thrown into the mix, now all of a sudden the Raiders have weapons. And so I just kind of think that's funny. So, yeah, that's really why I even brought it up. Not really defending either one of those quarterbacks. Again, I kind of think it's a wash with either one of those guys. You're getting the same thing out of both of them. And I do agree that Tom Brady has more upstairs and a little bit more intelligence. But again, at what cost? But that's just me. When it comes to Slay, I can't see myself wanting the Raiders to trade, give up draft capital, and pay a guy top dog money. I can't see that. I mean, for me, it's either or. You know what I mean? It's not both. Either you're trading draft capital, and that's what it is, or you're giving up free agent money. But not both. If you're doing both, I don't think that's a good idea. I understand why some people would want Darius Big Play Slay because he's a damn good defensive back. But again, doing both, paying top dog money, and I'm talking, he wants some top dog money, probably like close to $16 million. I underestimated when I said 14. He's going to want like almost best in the league, about $16 million a year. And I just don't, think that's fair. Again, I just don't. But again, that's just me. Let's go to the text message real quick. Hey Q, Yosemite Raider here. Just wanted to try out this text feature. Hope all is well with you. Keep grinding. I also wanted to speak on the Darius Slay matter. I say we don't need him. If we want to prioritize corner, then why not possibly trade up for Okuda? What are your thoughts? I'm a guy who likes Jeffrey Okuda a lot. I really, really do. And it's funny. I saw Benjamin Solak say give a comparison for Jeffrey Okuda and said that he reminded him of Gerrion Conley. And I was like, no, don't do that to me. I like Jeffrey Okuda. Part of the reason I like Jeffrey Okuda, and I'll be 100% honest with you, is because I saw him play in person. I saw him play at Belton High School. He was not from Belton, but Belton hosted his high school in the playoffs, and they lost to Jeffrey's team, and Jeffrey was a stud defensive back, and I said, yeah, he's going to be a dude, and that's when they said that he was going to go to Ohio State. So I kind of have seen him. I mean, I've seen him one game in person, so I kind of like him for that reason. I know that's a fault. I shouldn't like him just because I've seen him in person, but I do know he's a player. But then when he said that he reminded him of Gerrion Conley, I was thinking, oh my goodness, really? That's the way to crush my dreams. But I don't know. I don't think that the Raiders should trade up. If they want a defensive back at number 12, say, why not go after Christian Fulton from LSU? You know, I mean, seriously, I think Okuda's going to go top three, top four. But again, that's going to change as well, depending on what quarterbacks are there and what teams need quarterbacks. Teams always trade up to get quarterbacks. So I don't think you need to trade up in this draft at all. I think if anything, the Raiders should trade back and get more draft capital. I just hate giving draft capital away. But again, that's just how I think. So thank you so much for that text. I appreciate you. Next call is coming from the 707. My man Ron, he's from the 707, calling to talk about potential Pro Bowlers. Something that I brought up when we were talking about weapons that the Raiders have on, what is it, Monday show or Tuesday show? I think it was Tuesday show that I said that. But he's calling to respond to that. Here he is, Ron from the 707.
Hey, Q. This is Ron from the 707. I'm just going to give a quick call. I wanted to respond to Keem in Oakland, I think his name was, saying that, you know, Derek Carr has all these weapons because we almost had six Pro Bowlers on offense. How many of those Pro Bowlers were skill positions? I heard a lot of linemen and a fullback. Other than that, I heard two skill positions that were Pro Bowl players. And how many All-Pros did we have? Because that's what really matters. Pro Bowl is just, you know, it's a fan vote more than anything. All-Pro tells you how good a player truly is if they're truly the best of the best. You know, it's just crazy to me how deep people will dig to just bury Carr and say that, you know, it's all his fault. It's ridiculous to me. Tom Brady ain't solving nothing. Tom Brady is a shell of his former self, and I would hate, personally hate, to see him in the silver and black. To me, that would be like, I can't even think of a worse sin. You know, I'm trying to compare it to something, but there's no other worse sin I could think of. All right. Well, that's just my thoughts, Q. You have a good one, man. Go Raiders.
The potential Pro Bowlers that we were talking about were Darren Waller, Josh Jacobs, Alec Ingold, and Richie Incognito. Those were the four alternates. Then it was Rodney Hudson and Trent Brown. Both of those guys were actually Pro Bowlers, but Trent Brown didn't participate because he was injured. So Hudson and Brown were actual Pro Bowlers. The other four were alternates. And you're right. It's just a fan vote. That doesn't really matter. But the reason that I brought that up is really to talk about exactly what you're fired up about, which is the convo in 2019 that Carr needed weapons to be a really good quarterback like he had in 2016. But all of a sudden, when Brady's name was entered into the convo, suddenly the Raiders' weapons were enough. That was really the point. I only said Akeem in Oakland because he had brought that up during the season, and folks basically laughed at him, saying, no way the Raiders had good weapons, and suddenly, because Brady has six rings, he's going to suddenly turn the Raiders into an offensive juggernaut? I just don't think that, again, personally at this stage of the game, I think Brady and Carr are very similar. Again, that's just what I'm thinking, though. I feel like they're both on the same trajectory. But what you're fired up about is basically what we've been talking about, all the same thing. It's not any kind of disrespect or any kind of, you know, oh no, the Raiders have plenty of weapons. I think that they still need a number one wide receiver. I would like to see more weapons put on that team. But again, that goes for any quarterback, not just Carr, not Brady. It didn't matter if it was Jalen Hurts out there. It don't matter if it was Joe Flacco out there. It wouldn't matter if it's Drew Brees. I do think that the Raiders need more offensive weapons. I just see how the conversation has changed so quick because Brady's name is there instead of Carr's. Next up is a text message. Hey Q, Jason from Idaho. Been a Raider fan since 74. First time participating in any podcast. Until I found yours, I couldn't stand more than a few minutes. Wanted to touch on free agency. I'm with you. Keep Carr and draft a quarterback. I don't buy Brady or any other rumors at this point. If you look at social media, we're picking up every quarterback, defensive back, wideout, safety that's been released. We'll always have quarterback talk because they need something to talk about, and Gruden is a quarterback guy. If Brady leaves New England, there is a reason. It's because he's old. I personally would hate to see Brady in the silver and black. They don't let Brady leave if he's still the man. One last question and thought on the draft. I know you really like and push Hurts, which I'm good with. I'd really like Herbert, but I'm also a Ducks fan. Just don't think he'll be there when we pick. Heavy on D with free agency. What are your thoughts on CeeDee Lamb at 16? I personally like him better than Judy. Linebacker or wideout, Judy Ruggs, if available. So he's saying linebacker or either one of these wideouts, Jerry Judy or Henry Ruggs, if available at 18, and grab Hurts at number 80 to learn behind Carr and have a wideout that he's comfortable with. D with the rest of the picks. Thanks for the show, Q, and for keeping things upbeat and not negative. Go Raiders. There's a lot to unpack there. First of all, thank you for the compliments on the podcast. I really do appreciate that. I'm glad that you know, you enjoy what you hear, and it's awesome that you've been a fan since 74, because I've only been alive since 76, so that tells you all that you really need to know, but I definitely appreciate that. As far as weapons go, Jerry Judy and CeeDee Lamb, I think that you're looking at 1 and 1A, really. Both of those wide receivers are really, really good. It depends on what you're looking at. I think CeeDee Lamb goes to the Cardinals at number 8. That's just me. I think that the Cardinals are going to pick him at number 8. So I think the next best available guy would be Jerry Judy. But I would not be surprised if Henry Ruggs ends up being the guy. I think that everyone is on the same page with you as far as a linebacker and a wide receiver in round 1 at 12 and number 19. That would be ideal. And if you get Jalen Hurts, and that's what I want to do, get Jalen Hurts in round 3, I would be fine with that. I think that'd be great, and let him sit behind Carr and learn. That would be awesome. And then, like you said, D. Defense needs to be heavy concentration in free agency, and it needs to be heavy in the draft as well. But they have a lot of options in the draft, and, you know, they got plenty of free agency money. So if they play their cards right and don't go give away you know, draft capital for a guy like Darius Slay, plus you have to give him free agent money. You know, that's just, I think that's just silly. That's kind of my point of staying away from certain guys. You know, go get guys that you either have to give up draft capital or you have to give up free agency money, but don't do both. You're trying to build this team. You're not one guy away from winning a championship. You need to build the roster. So, yeah, I'm with you on that. I like your ideas there. Again, wide receiver and linebacker, I think by the end of the first day of the draft, April 23rd in Las Vegas, I think the Raiders will have a new wide receiver and a new linebacker. You know, that's just me. I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to either be Isaiah Simmons or maybe Patrick Queen. I'm kind of getting a little, not soft, but I'm kind of cooling off on Kenneth Murray from Oklahoma. Really, I'm really focused more on Patrick Queen and either Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, or CeeDee Lamb as the wide receiver. Next call comes from Border Jumper Raider. He's calling to talk about what he heard on Monday's show and wants to respond to the Brady to the Raiders speculation. Here he is, Border Jumper Raider.
Good morning, Border Jumper Raider. I'm just halfway listening to yesterday's podcast, Monday, February 17th. Now, up until about 9 years ago, I lived for 24 years in New England. And, you know, when you live in a certain area, Los Angeles, Boston, New York, you're going to get that local, sportscast and, well, just to make it short. In New England, those fans, and I do have an appreciation for it because I hope someday, you know, we have that quarterback. But they love Tom Brady. The fans, man, love is blind. They love this kid. Well, he's an old man now in football years. But I just don't see it. I really don't see Tom Brady leaving New England. I know. I have a strong feeling. I'm not the type to say I know because I don't. But I got a strong suspicion. Bob Kraft really loves Tom Brady. On the other hand, Bill Belichick is a head coach. And I think that he may be wanting to start looking for some new blood. But I know that Belichick loves the ball in Brady's hands when it comes down to finishing the game. And that's about it. I have some other things I want to say, but I don't want to get cut off. So, hey, have a great work week. Love you, Q. Great job. Awesome, man, doing the PA at Baylor. That's awesome. Take care.
Yeah, I'm with you, my man. Hopefully this will all get settled sooner rather than later. Of course, my gut feeling tells me it won't. My gut feeling tells me there's going to be a lot ramped up at the combine. But again, who knows? You know, who knows how this is all going to shake out? Ultimately, I believe Tom Brady ends up back in New England in 2020. But again, we won't know until we absolutely do know. Thank you so much for that call. I really appreciate you, my man. Next up is a text message. Hey Q, this is Raider J77. I'm listening to Tuesday's podcast and completely agree about the narrative change. I personally have always held to the narrative that Carr has had weapons, albeit not a Hall of Fame caliber wide receiver one, but that being said, he has had an opportunity to win games and hasn't. Now you said that the offense for the Pats and Raiders were very similar. I agree, but with the caveat. Josh Jacobs, our run game is better, no question in my opinion. So, it got me thinking, if both offensive weapons are similar and the Raiders had a better run game, but Pat scored more points, then wouldn't the difference be Tom Brady versus Derek Carr? Just a thought. Love what you're doing and hope all is well with you. Just win, baby. It's great text message right there, and Josh Jacobs is definitely the difference maker. I mean, he really is, because he's a stud running back, and we all know that John Gruden wants to rely heavy on the run game, so Josh Jacobs is that dude. I think that Tom Brady kind of changes the game a little bit when he's there. I think you don't go quite as run heavy just because Tom Brady's different, and he's always been a different dude, but you know, I definitely see where you're coming from. You know, I just feel like the Raiders offense and the Patriots offense weren't too much different. Now, there are some different players, no doubt, and if you put player to player next to each other, yes, I can say that there's better guys, but it's just funny to me, again, how this whole thing got started and why I even talked about this is the fact that all 2019, all you heard, especially on this podcast, a lot of calls was Derek Carr don't have no weapons. Now, all of a sudden, Derek Carr's weapons are fine. It's just Derek Carr's not a good quarterback. So, you know, it's just funny to hear how quickly stories could change. And again, that's what fans do. You know, fan is short for fanatic. So I'm not mad. I just wanted to point it out. And obviously, it didn't ruffle feathers, but it got a lot of people's attention. So I guess it did what it was supposed to do. So thank you so much for that. I appreciate you. Final call of the show is from Jordan from Oregon. He's calling to respond to the Tom Brady, Derek Carr convo that's been on the podcast lately, and especially what he heard on Tuesday. Here he is, Jordan from Oregon.
Hey, what's going on, Q? This is Jordan in Oregon. Hey, man, I wanted to call in. I was listening to the podcast on B-Tuesday's edition. And a couple quick points on the Tom Brady, Derek Carr conversation. You know, one kind of angle I have to that whole, I guess you could say debate or whatever you want to call it, conversation, is just the timeline. The timeline of Tom Brady being the age he is. I mean, if we were talking about, you know, a 35-year-old Tom Brady joining the Raiders, you'd kind of be foolish not to at least respect that he is going to be around long enough to bring, you know, multiple good seasons to an organization. But where he's at with his age right now, it's almost laughable for us to try to consider him being a realistic option. The reason I mention that is I think nowadays in the NFL, with the way that the salary cap is set up currently, is everybody's trying to find that window of when your quarterback is either young and on a rookie deal or young and on their first contract. And with that being said, it basically plays a factor in how you build your team around the quarterback position. In other words, if you're Mahomes on a rookie deal, you can sign some big name free agents, a Tyrann Mathieu and some guys that are going to be bigger number hits because you have a quarterback on a rookie deal. And for the Raiders right now, I think it's interesting because if you try to put it into John Gruden's timeline and just our financial situation right now, sure, we've got the cap and everything, but the timeline for what Gruden's trying to do, I just don't see it. I don't see them going after a quarterback who's at most got 2 to 3 seasons to play. I just really don't. I know that's a really broad statement just to assume that they wouldn't do that. But with the way that they're trying to implement this rookie class and the way that they've obviously invested our future in the draft, I don't see them all of a sudden going young, 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 okay, now most important position, enter the oldest dude in the league. It just doesn't make sense. And so I know my answer is a little all over the place, but I just truly believe, long story short, this team is not set up timeline-wise to bring in a quarterback as a quick stopgap, you know, championship run type thing. It's just, we're not there yet, Raider Nation, but you should be happy about that. Who wants to see that dude in silver and black? I know, I sure as hell don't, but anyway, peace out, Raider Nation. Hope you guys have a great week, and I've been loving the podcast. You're sure find a way to make the best of a slow time of year, so I appreciate it, Q. Keep putting in the work, man, like you always do. Peace out, man.
Really good point right there, what you're saying with the quarterback and the pay scale that they're currently on. You're 100% right. The way the NFL teams are being built right now, quarterbacks under a cheap deal, that's the way to build the team. And you build the team around those guys on that cheap deal. You mentioned Patrick Mahomes. He won the Super Bowl on his rookie deal. What's going to happen when they finally give him like $40 million a year? You know, I mean, that's a great point because that is exactly how teams are being built. Look, the Seattle Seahawks, they won the Super Bowl on what? Russell Wilson's rookie deal. You know what I mean? Like, think about that. I mean, really, just absolutely think about that. 49ers, they got to the Super Bowl, and Jimmy Garoppolo is very high paid, but he ain't the highest paid quarterback. You know what I mean? So there's different ways of skin a cat, but you're right about the way that the NFL is being built these days. You get the cheaper quarterback, you're able to build the team, you have that window of opportunity. I don't think the Raiders go out and spend $30 million a year on Tom Brady. I just don't see it. But again, I could always be proven wrong. So we'll have to see how it shakes out. But this will be a storyline until it's not a storyline anymore. Either the Raiders come out and say, no, this ain't happening. Either, you know, Tom Brady signs with the Patriots or whatever, something happens, you know, but we'll know sooner rather than later. So that's going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much for all the response, all the text messages, all the calls, all the love. Again, you can always tweet at me at your boy Q254 on Twitter. Coming up on tomorrow's show, more news and notes for the day, more of your calls, more of your text messages, and maybe Max Crosby will have responded by then and I can get him for an interview. That'd be great. Well, we'll see how that all shakes out moving forward. I didn't get to my Terrell Lewis interview that I had from Miami from Radio Row. Maybe I'll drop that on tomorrow's show. Who knows? Got that segment number two wide open like some old school TV antennas, and I'll see how I'm going to feel that. But that'll be for tomorrow's show. So until then, Raider Nation, as always, just win, baby.